starting again on Scribble.
Welcome to Scribble, 30 minutes of conversation, comments, and reviews on reading and writing, editing, publishing, and selling books. I'm Rebecca Wee.
And I'm Don Wooten. Roll Tweet is no longer with us, but we remember him on Scribble. Rebecca, if you remember, it was almost 7 years ago, we three started the program, you and Roald and I, and you were our very first guest. That's amazing. I think that was back in 2014.
Yep, that's... I remember knowing that this was a new thing you were undertaking, but not why you had me be your first guest.
Well, because... We admired your poetry and the fact that you were a published poet and you were close at hand.
Yeah.
So let's get Rebecca in here. And then afterwards, we thought, well, you know, if one of us checks out, there's the substitute. I don't want to make it sound like you're just substitute. But it's you were the one we had in mind from the beginning.
Well.
So, you know. Here we are, absent Roald.
Yes, and I know I asked you earlier if it was okay if I was going to cry on air because it's I haven't dealt with it yet. Maybe we never deal with it. But, you know, Tweet was my first introduction to Augustana. He met me at the airport when I came for my interview and drove me around the Quad Cities. And I just... have so many memories of the ways that he would kind of slide in and out of the office with his things he wanted you to read or things that he was up to and carvings that he made and paintings and all of it.
Yeah, he was I've talked about so many things and written a little bit about him, but, you know, it does leave a vacancy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the college and the whole community, because Roald was very active in a variety of things. And it's odd to think not only that he is gone, but so much of what we consider normal life is gone.
Yeah, yep.
It's, you know, he used to come over almost every day in the morning at the Apris shop where they were preparing to read newspapers, and he'd sit there and drink coffee and talk with people.
Yep.
And he'd pick up all kinds of information there that we used on the show.
Yes, yeah.
And then he would meet for as long as he could. He went over to the, I don't know what they call it, cafeteria, student union.
Yeah, yep.
And sit and chat with his fellow profs. After he had retired.
Yeah. Well, I remember hating his retirement party. It was a wonderful party, but I couldn't imagine our department without him. You know, you're right. It just leaves a huge vacancy. I remember him defending when we asked, well, I think I asked him why he had decided to leave us. And he said, I just feel like it's time to let the younger generation come, you know, that I've been doing this a long time and it's meant a lot to me, but it's time to, and I just thought, no, you can't leave it. You can't.
Well, you know, it is true. And sometimes I feel guilty about that myself because here I am in my 90s and I'm still broadcasting.
Yeah.
I'm sure there are many, many competent people who can just take over and do this. And it's, but on the other hand, if I did that, what would I do?
Well, but people do count on you, just as we did on Roald, you know, that you're a presence and someone who's been part of this scene in this town and on this campus. And, you know, you you don't ever replace anybody. You can't, you know, it's...
Well, that's true. Everyone is truly unique. And yet, when we go, we're gone.
Yep.
That is the unassailable fact.
Yep.
I remember when my best friend Ed Angerer passed, and I've talked about this before. I'd go down downtown Rock Hill and look around and think, doesn't anybody realize Ed isn't here?
Yeah.
The fact is, no, they didn't.
Yeah, exactly. I remember that after I lost Michael, my husband. One of the things I kept thinking when I came back to campus after I had taken a break was that every new person I met, I wanted to say, hello, I'm Rebecca Wee. I used to be married to Michael Hudson, and you would be amazed to know what that person was all about, you know, and I couldn't stand it that people didn't know him and that they weren't going to.
And that's why I have thought a long time, you know, that there's no point in trying to carve a place for yourself in memory. Mm-hmm. There was a great poem. Well, not a great poem, but a poem by Vachel Lindsay, The Eagle That Is Forgotten, about Governor Altgeld, who had such a profound influence on Illinois, set up the Department of Mental Health. He was governor during the Haymarket riot and was vilified by his opponents. But when he died, there was this great outpouring of grief from friends and enemies. And nobody remembers Altgeld today.
Yeah.
And Vachel Lindsay said, it is better to live in mankind than in a name. And I thought, take that to heart.
Yeah.
Take that to heart, because when you're gone, nobody's going to be chanting your name.
Right.
There'll be a few people who will remember, but you will just be gone, and the next act comes on.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a sequence in life.
It is, isn't it? I know.
Yeah, it's kind of hard sometimes. There are things about life that are hard. All living things live because they kill and eat other living things, whether they're animals or plants or what.
Yep.
If you don't, you die.
Yep.
And you know you're going to die anyway. So what does that...
I know. What does that leave? Does that leave us to do? Well, I guess when I think of Roald and I think of he felt like family somehow from the minute I met him. And maybe it was because he would just kind of come by the office and slide a poem under the door or leave you a little carving or, you know, some... I made a list when I was thinking about him the other night of all the little surprises. Well, it's not all of them, but it's the ones that came to mind. And a lot of them were these little wooden carvings because he was always carving.
Oh, yeah.
But I have a little tiny pig that he left on my desk with a note saying, your very own male chauvinist pig, because I think... that I had just come from a meeting at Women and Gender Studies that had been very heated, and I had said something about it. So the next thing you know, he's giving you a little – there was a little pig sitting on my desk. And I think I have a sea serpent, and I have a little bird that had a little tiny wooden curl of a feather on its head. And, you know, he just added things to your life all the time and unexpectedly.
Yes, he could do that. I have some of those carvings myself, and he was quite a guy. And funny. But the thing that confounded me about him, I used to treasure our arguments over punctuation and grammar.
Uh-huh.
Of course, I didn't know what I was talking about. He was the professor, but I would argue. And always he could come up, pull out of his memory one quotation after another.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I thought, how does he keep all that stuff stored in his head?
I don't know. Yeah. I remember telling him when he was asking me about a line in one of my own poems and saying, how does that go? And I thought, I don't know. I have to have the text in front of me. And my excuse was always just I revised so much that I can't remember where I left it last, even after it gets published. But that wasn't a problem he had. You know, he could remember everything. Yeah,
just about anything. I started going to Quint City Poets, and I thought he was going to go too, but no, he never showed up.
I think he got me going there too when I first came here.
Yeah, they've been going quite a while.
Oh, they have. Yeah, they have.
And it was interesting. I went over just to arrange for an interview with people and was intrigued by the group and started coming back, but you had to write a poem.
Yeah, yeah.
And all of a sudden I started writing poetry. Pretty bad stuff, but I wrote it.
Well, it's in the ear of the beholder, you know, whether it's good or bad, right?
Well, he was always on people to write.
Yeah, I know.
I thought, my Lord, there's so many books in the world. Why do you want more? We can't keep up with them.
Well,
30,000, I forget how many. He would keep track of all that.
Oh, my goodness.
And, but, you know, it's just, the first thing I wrote was we were doing limericks. Mm. And when he appeared in the newspaper dressed in a tuxedo for the first and only time in his life, I greeted him on this program with this. When Roel dressed in a tuxedo, his friends all exclaimed, "Oh, how neato! How much better," they said, "than the sight that we dread, seeing him clad in a Speedo."
Oh, and I bet he just loved it, oh, you know? Yeah. You didn't warn him, so he just heard it on air?
No, why warn?
Yeah, exactly.
He never warned me about it. It was tricks. But then later on, I wrote something to present there, and I was trying to write in the style of the poets around me.
Okay.
And I was thinking of Roel at the student union, you know.
Yeah.
So I came up with this. Amiable, easy, he sits at the table, among colleagues one-upping, coffee in hand, attentive. A web of sound covers the room, laughter breaking through. Students scattered around them, fractured between food and phones, in haste, even at leisure. The warmth of bodies and motion and repose in and out of classes, circling back to this, the universal haven, center of his world, his life, his love, his meaning.
Oh, that's beautiful and very accurate. You know,
it's not a great poem, but I got away with it.
Oh,
at the
no.
Quint City Poets meeting.
No, when you're starting poetry, I was thinking this because I have an intro to poetry class that I've been teaching here, and a few years ago we opened it up to students from other disciplines who needed an art credit. So we counted, hey, people know how to write, we'll let the intro poetry. So suddenly, instead of our creative writers or our English majors, we had chemists in there, and we had students who were in business administration. And I thought, I can't work with these people. They don't know anything about language. They don't care about it. And I was so wrong. It's turned out to be a wonderful thing. But we always have to start with, you have to notice things. If you don't pay attention to what's going on in the world or what's going on inside you, you will have a hard time writing, you know. And so what you were doing with that poem right there, you're looking at a setting. You're listening to the sounds of people. You are thinking what this room is like. Didn't you have a web of sound? Is that what I heard you say? Mm-hmm. One of the lines. So you think of, here's what I'm looking at. What is it like? You know, little kids are so good at similes, and we get so lazy in our older age. I taught a workshop once for a friend to little kids who couldn't write or read. And I went prepared for, you know, a seventh grade class. And suddenly it occurred to me on the drive, like they can't read or write. All I had to do was give them "the cloud is like," and they started filling it in. And there wasn't a single cotton ball in their description, which is what at the college level, if I tell them, what's a cloud like? They'll all say cotton ball. you know, it's the first thing that comes to mind. Those kids were saying, the clouds are like a little girl who doesn't know what to wear in the morning. The clouds are like a big slug under a piece of wood. The clouds are like, you know, they were so utterly present to the world. They hadn't learned to sort of take a shortcut. You know, they were just utterly engaged with everything. And so that's really kind of where I start with the intro level of poetry, is to keep lists of what you notice. What did you taste? What did you smell? What is that thing like? Because that's where you start, I think. So,
well, Roald was, of course, he was a liar too.
That's yes, what... yes. Yes, he was.
I shouldn't put it that baldly.
Well.
But he says, you know, he's not lying, it's a stretcher.
Yeah, exactly.
He could sit across from me and say something, and I'd say, Roald, that's not true. Yes, it is. And his eyes would give away nothing.
I know.
Not a thing. You think, when I was in the Senate, I found that I could read people's eyes and tell when they were lying, but I could not detect anything.
No.
No, he was deadly that way.
He did not give anything away. And so he could be standing in the door and telling you something, and I remember thinking, is this a joke? Is this serious? I don't even know how to react to him, because he'd just have maybe a little smile on his mouth, but that wouldn't tell you what was going on. So, oh, man. I brought the first poem he ever slid under my door when I was new faculty here. And if we've got time, I'll read it, because I had not read it before. And I don't even remember if he told me why he was giving it to me. I think it was just, you know, have you ever read this? And that's how he would bring things into your life, I guess. So this is by Richard Wilbur, and it's called Love Calls Us to the Things of This World. And it makes me think of Roald, actually, that title. The eyes open to a cry of pulleys, and spirited from sleep, the astounded soul hangs for a moment, bodiless and simple as false dawn. Outside the open window, the morning air is all awash with angels. Some are in bedsheets, some are in blouses, some are in smocks, but truly they are there. Now they are rising together in calm swells of halcyon feeling, filling whatever they wear with the deep joy of their impersonal breathing. Now they are flying in place, conveying the terrible speed of their omnipresence, moving and staying like white water. And now of a sudden they swoon down into so rapt a quiet that nobody seems to be there. The soul shrinks from all that it is about to remember, from the punctual rape of every blessed day, and cries, oh, let there be nothing on earth but laundry, nothing but rosy hands in the rising steam and clear dances done in the sight of heaven. Yet as the sun acknowledges with a warm look the world's hunks and colors, the soul descends once more in bitter love to accept the waking body, saying now in a changed voice as the man yawns and rises, bring them down from their ruddy gallows. Let there be clean linen for the backs of thieves. Let lovers go fresh and sweet to be undone, and the heaviest nuns walk in a pure floating of dark habits, keeping their difficult balance.
It's amazing how he kept up with poetry.
Oh, I know. Yeah, I mean, here I was, new in the English department to teach poetry, and he's sliding a poem under the door that I'd never heard of before. And I think he'd usually ask, you know, what do you think that's about? Something like that.
Yeah, he was cruel that way.
And there you are going, it's about laundry.
I read this novel, Deacon King Kong, and I thought, wow, this is just great. And I gave him a copy, And he said, what did you think about the ending? What do you mean? Well, there's more there than that. And I thought, oh, my God.
We got to go back. I missed it.
I didn't look at this closely enough. I was having too much fun reading it. But he was like that. He was always able to look into things rather more deeply than you thought.
Yeah, and take we're trying right now in the department to gather assignments that he would give his students. We've got a couple because he was famous for that. You're going to write a paper and you can't use any E's in any of the writing.
E's or no A's. And we had initiated some contests on this program, or maybe it was Saturday Morning Live. I can't remember, but he would. You know, you'd have to write a limerick on a serious topic.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
You think I can do that? Uh-huh. And then you try it and no.
Yeah, the sound won't let you do it. The sound won't let you be serious.
Uh-huh. And that business of writing a poem with one-syllable words.
Yeah, yep.
And it had to be so many lines long. We got entries all over the place.
Oh, sure. The way that makes you pay attention to language and words and to rhythm and all kinds of things that you maybe weren't thinking of until you have to try to make it happen, you know.
Yeah.
He was wonderful. That's made him such a brilliant teacher, I think.
We had an argument about commas versus semicolons that finally wound up in the newspaper.
Oh, that's perfect. That's just perfect. An argument about commas and semicolons. That's really good. I'm trying to think of, you know, from the moment he was there waiting for me at the airport, like a little Norwegian Nissa, you know, kind of, and then driving me crazily all through the Quad Cities to find somewhere to eat. And he knew every little hidden place, Ma's Studio Diner, which was a place that he took me to later, not on that first visit. But, you know, Ma was kind of cranky if you didn't clean your plate. And, you know, he wouldn't tell you what you were in for. He'd just sort of deposit you there and watch you have the experience.
The many things you could say about Roald, I think the finest is that he was the perfect teacher.
Yeah, yep.
And teaching, it's not just an accumulation of facts.
Oh, no.
It's learning to think.
Yep.
And boy, did he make you think.
Yeah, yeah.
And he never stopped that.
Nope. He made you think, but he also listened really carefully to what you came up with, which doesn't always happen in the classroom, right? There's an agenda to follow and there's no room for you to be really, really attended to by the teacher. And he did that as well.
But the mischief in the guy was just unbelievable.
I know.
He was always playing tricks. He was always concocting things. We put together an imaginary college down in the Abelard College in Heloise, Iowa.
Oh, which is nice.
Color in the beginning. But and we peopled that. And we conned folks who would come on the air to say, you know, I was just down to visit Abelard, you know. Oh, I took a course at Abelard. We could con others to keep the thing going until we finally had this big grand homecoming parade at Abelard that he and Lars Scott were narrating as I played this recording of bands going by. We had someone record a greeting as if he were the president of the college, and it was so thoroughly done that some people thought it was real.
Oh, sure. Well, and that just reminds me of the importance of fun, you know, to have fun in the education of, you know, not the students who are, you know, wildly just taking notes that they will later regurgitate, but to, as you say, make people think, but remind them how wonderful it is, you know, to come into your office and find a little carved male chauvinist pig sitting on your chair, or a poem under the door that you'd never seen. Or a church pew. After my husband Michael died and I came back to teaching, I was, I think, sleepwalking for quite a while, but rolled in his very unobtrusive but particular way. I remember one day I was in a campus, I was renting a campus house, and so the grounds crew would come by and mow my lawn and ask if I needed help with anything. And one day I answered the door and they were standing on the sidewalk with a church pew, a short one, one of the little short ones from the front, and said, "Where do you want this?" And I was going, "Why? Where? What is it? Why is it here?" "Oh, we were told to bring it to you." And of course, in the end, when I tracked it down, it was rolled. He was up to, you know, I don't know why he sent me that church pew.
Well, it's... maybe he was encouraging you toward piety or something.
It might have been, yes. Or the other way around. Take this holy church pew into the mess of your own home and sit on it. Oh, yeah.
Well, we could talk on forever, I think, about Roald, but the sad fact is that he is not here and the program space is available, and so we are to make use of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so you agreed to take this either when you said you would think about it.
Yes.
You would either stay or do it for a while and go. And so we'll see how that plays out. But the real problem is how we're going to have guests in this pandemic time. The station has very strict protocol about coming into this station.
Yeah.
And also... normally, you can only have one person in the studio at a time. You and I are both vaccinated and separated by a nice layer of plastic.
Yes.
But still, you know, we have to be very careful. And if we do that, how can we have a guest? We have another plastic partition we can put up to separate you, but that guest has to be vaccinated.
Yes.
And I don't know how this is going to work.
We will make our way. I said yes to this gig when you first wrote to me about it, only after you told me that you and Roald had decided that I should be part of this. And then I thought, well, now I can't say no. I'm going to have to step up. But yeah, we were not really counting on the pandemic being what it is and what it is becoming. So we'll have to... we'll have to make our way.
Yeah, I think at first we will go along with some other stuff. I think the next time maybe I'd like to explore what I call foundational books, and that is books or poems or material that you have read that has had an impact on your life. That's certainly true in your life, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. I wouldn't have become a teacher or a poet without one poem.
I think it's true with everybody, and we will see how that plays out. Well, that'll do it. I'm Don Wooten with Rebecca Wee on a revival of Scribble. We've enjoyed your company and hope you'll be with us again next week for the next edition of Scribble.